Tonight we're, as suggested, going to be talking about succession planning. And one area where it's particularly difficult is in regional areas and farms and rural properties. Here's something from the WA Country Hour.
To me, farm succession is a dirty word. I married into a farming family when I was very young. Now, 30 plus years later, we still do not know where we're going. So I think farm succession is something that it makes me quiver when I think of it. To me, it's just all it means is arguments, squabbles, bitterness, resentment.
As you heard, succession planning hasn't been discussed on her property, and it's led to a life of uncertainty, anger, and some sadness. So what is it about succession planning that strikes fear into the heart of so many families? Too often, farmers and family businesses let death, divorce, or illness make the succession planning decision for them. Surely for a business or farm to thrive well into the future, a business or succession plan is vital for survival. And tonight we're going to talk about it with a couple of people who deal with it on a regular basis. Psychotherapist and mediator Bernie Bolger was with us tonight. Bernie, good evening.
How are you?
Very good indeed. And estate planning lawyer Donald Griffin also tonight. Donald, great to see you.
Thank you, Tony.
I guess we're going to explore what it is about succession planning that sees it top the list year in, year out for the task most avoided by family business owners and farmers alike. Bernie, as the cliche goes, there are only two things we can be sure of, death and taxes. Surely succession planning can make the whole process a little easier.
Yeah. So you would think, and I'd kind of put it back, that if we were, like economists would like us to be, homo economicus, as in very rational individuals, that would make sense. But unfortunately, we are humans with emotions and fears and needs and anxieties. And because of that, money comes into everything, succession comes into everything, needs about what's going to happen in the future come into everything. If you actually look and see family businesses, I think 70% of businesses worldwide are actually family businesses.
Yeah.
So why is it that only 30% of them make it to the second generation and 12% make it to the third? And it's not because it's hard. It's not because technically it's hard. It's because to talk about it, it brings up all kinds of emotions. It's messy. It's complicated. It's actually just far better off having a beer and talking about the footy.
My dad ran an electrical business for 40, 50 years, and it was always seen that my stepbrother Alan would take it on. Succession plans were ended very early on. I just said, no, you know, that's not me. Unfortunately, it went awry because of an accident that happened to Alan later on in life.
Oh, dear.
And the whole thing was derailed. And, and it just got really, really messy. And therefore, you know, you delay retiring simply because you just can't see a natural successor.
There's no plan B.
Mm.
I mean, I think in the olden days, in days gone by, it was so much easier when it was just assumed that the eldest son was the heir apparent, you know, and that's to a certain extent not always fair, but it was less complicated. You grew up knowing with certainty where your place was in the future. The eldest son was going to get it all, and you then knew that you had to make your way elsewhere. But now I think because there's higher levels of education in family members, there's lots of different job opportunities, and might we say it, even women might actually be able to take over the reins of a business into the future. So it's not as straightforward as before. We really do have to talk about it. And that's even before when the siblings marry and you bring the in-laws into it as well. And they have a say in what's going to happen. And rightly so, because it's their future as well. You know, they are part of the family, especially if nothing is known, if it's still uncertain what is going to happen. It's all about financial security and giving people peace of mind.
Donald, in a way, it's about also like making a will. You know, we know death is inevitable, but a lot of us think, oh, you know, I'll get round to it, but, you know, delay. And it's just one of those things where it's a sign of our own mortality, I guess.
That's right. I mean, I think the statistics are that one in two people have a will. The statistics as to how many of those wills are any good, I think would show a much lower figure.
Because we live very complex lives now. You know, the days of a wife and two children and a picket fence are way behind us, you know.
Well, that's right. People have ex-wives and ex-husbands and children who may have boyfriends, or are they de facto partners? It is a bit more complex, and with superannuation and life insurance and so on, there's a lot of moving parts.
Bernie, can we ultimately separate business from our emotional investment in the company, particularly if you've built it up over decades?
If you're talking about, say, the owner of the business, I mean, a lot of our identity is wrapped up in work. You know, that's especially, and this might, don't mean to be genderized, but especially with men, it is who we are is what we do. So it's very hard if you are talking about handing over the reins. How does that person find meaning and purpose in life? And even though he might know rationally that at 95 years of age, it might be time to let go, emotionally, he can't. So it's absolutely imperative that the emotion is separated from the finances, from the rational. Managing a business, owning a business, running a business, all different skill sets. And just because it's yours doesn't mean you should stay there in the actual running of a business. Just like in a, if it wasn't a family business or a farm, you know, it is time to move on. And in the corporate world, there is always a succession plan. And quite frankly, you'd be fired if there weren't. You know, that's actually part of it.
Well, so, is there always a succession plan?
Successful businesses transfer well and into the future. And there is like a strategy plan 5 years out, and then it's reviewed every day. It's basically like having a strategy, just as in, because everything changes. Laws change, staff change. So at least if you're looking at the goal, even, you know, in the distance, there is some, you've got a plan A, you've got plan B, you've got plan C, and you're not dealing with it totally in crisis mode.
If you need to SMS tonight, you can. That's easy. 0467 922 702. 0467 922 702. Donald, the wealthiest woman in Australia, Gina Rinehart, has obviously had a lot of difficulties in managing a very large business. The natural successors, obviously her children. And it's one of those things where it seems to have been almost a battleground, and certainly great fodder for the lawyers.
That's right, and for the readers of newspapers and watchers of television, it's been interesting to watch. I think that was a very good example of old school estate planning, where somebody sat in their very large office and summoned their lawyers, told them what they wanted to happen, and were probably, I'm only guessing, but were probably not challenged as to how this would be met by the people involved. It was probably handed down like tablets.
It is a big difference, isn't it, from a private company to a corporate entity? Because, you know, with the corporate entity, you've got to, put certain things in place. But a private company or, you know, a private business, a farm, that sort of thing, it comes down to personal choice.
It does, and people who are matriarchs and patriarchs of family businesses often forget about even the fact that it's a private company, and there's things called corporate governance, and the directors of a company have to make certain decisions and shareholders have to make other decisions. And the, where we see in our practice at Legacy Law is that the people sometimes take shortcuts, and that means that their plans can be unravelled. So, for instance, a will cannot properly direct how shares in a company, or decisions in a company, I should say, are made.
Okay. Here's another bit of audio from WA Country Hour. This time it's a woman who's also anonymous, talking about the older versus younger generation dilemma when it comes to succession planning.
The younger generation probably needs to realise that it takes a bit of time to do it properly, because generally the older generation is thinking about it, even if they're not outwardly showing it. And when it comes time to sit and talk about it, open communication's great. And I think older people need to respect that the younger ones want it done now, and younger ones need to respect that the older ones see the need to do it properly and need to think about it and take their time to do it well, because I don't think you get a second chance.
Yeah. Is that pretty true, Bernie? You only get one go at it?
Well, there's two ways of looking at you only get one way at start, one chance at starting it. But I would hope in a succession plan, that's what it is. It is a plan and it needs to be reviewed. But I think where she was right is it is about communication. There is no point, as Donal said earlier on, in just summoning the lawyers and saying, this is what I want. Because after the matriarch of Partick is gone, everyone has to deal with the fallout of it. So a good succession plan starts with communication. And even though that sounds easy, that's actually why it falls down. Because, I mean, I've been on this program before and talked about conversations about money are so difficult and people really, really avoid having them. There's so much judgment involved in it. So can you imagine you're trying to have a conversation and maybe you want to tell someone, actually, I'm not really interested in taking over the farm that's been in the family for five generations. I mean, that's a really hard thing to say. And you don't want to feel ungrateful. It might be that the owner knows that their children actually don't have the tools to run it. So how do you have these conversations? And what human beings do is they actually avoid having the conversations at all and hope, you know, let's have that beer, let's talk about the footy, it'll be right.
Yeah.
And so what I would say, without any doubt, yes, you get many chances at it, and the earlier you start, the easier it will be to see if it's going to work or not. And one of the things that I think is vital, just like you call in the lawyer, just like you call in the financial advisor, accountant, call in a facilitator or a mediator to actually have this conversation, because there's no way in the world that family dynamics and politics will not get involved in a conversation, and there's resentment and there's unspoken emotions. So people have to feel safe. I mean, I remember I was on a panel once and we were talking about this, and this very strong man, he was saying, oh, I know what my kids want. And I'm thinking, my God, you know, even the way he spoke would terrify even the strongest of child, because there's a lot of conditional love involved. So you need to find out what your sons and daughters want to do. You need to know, but there's no point in putting them in a job that they've no passion for at all, because basically that's why family businesses fail, because you're making people fit into places they don't want to be. So communication, and I think it's nearly an arrogance to think that you can do this yourself. The most important conversation in a family business or on a farm you will ever have has to be done well. So bring in an outsider. Doesn't cost a huge amount of money, but it will be the best money ever invested.
Donald, from a legal perspective, it is one of those particular problems that, you know, we speak of a family as though it's one thought. As we've seen on many prominent families, there's more than one line of thinking about, you know, the future of the business. Should it be sold? Should it be, you know, held in family trust? Should multiple people run it? You know, there are a lot of options for second, third generation.
That's right, and anybody who's had children will know that they don't often share a toy at Christmas very well. People have different financial needs, different agendas. They may want a simple life. They may share the same DNA, but they have different ways about going about their business. And the parents are often extremely unreliable judges of their children's skills, particularly when it comes to running a business.
Yeah. Bernie, some talk about the daughter-in-law syndrome on farms. You know, often women who marry into the family are tertiary educated, have a lot to offer. What advice would you offer the women in succession planning, you know, and how you get the best outcome?
I keep on going back to it, and it sounds like it's all I can talk about, but it is a communication. This is really, really important. We're not just talking about the actual relationship or the fact that daughter-in-law is an outsider on in the family farm. This is about human lives. It's about grandchildren. And a lot of the time there's a real primal instinct to protect children. And so you have to know what's happening. A lot of times decisions are made, or there's like an expectation or an assumption that things are going to happen a certain way. But it's those assumptions that are the killer. So there has to be someone who initiates the talk. Now, sometimes it's very hard for the outsider to come in and say, I'm calling a family meeting. So really, before they actually marry into the family, have a conversation with the husband-to-be, if it is. I mean, it is normally the daughter-in-law. Have a conversation with the husband-to-be and say, we need to know what's going to happen in the future. Because so often, it happens all the time, sons will work on a farm for minimum wage. I mean, farms don't have a lot of cash being thrown off. So big asset, very little cash. So they will work for years on minimum cash. But then the kids come along, and how are they going to be educated? If they're living in rural Australia, where does the education come in? How's it going to be financed? Unless those things are made clear at first, expectations are going to be set that could be disappointed. Mm. And that's where conflict and resentment comes in. The realisation that the farm actually isn't going to be split between the five boys is, you know, is something that has to be dealt with early on. And then the informed decision made, is it viable for us all to stay on the farm if we all have five kids ourselves? There just isn't, that isn't going to work.
Yeah. So and how do the others get their share if you decide to take it over?
And that's where it's important to find exactly what everyone's expectations are, have that conversation, and then call in the lawyers, the accountants, the financial planners, who can work out a structure that will suit everyone. There's some very sophisticated ways, and I'm not an expert in this. Don will be much more in his domain.
Mm.
But you cannot do that until you have the conversation first. And there is nothing wrong with asking what it is going to mean for us financially into the future. Financial security in old age is like physical pain. And that's research-based. Mm. You have a right, as just as if you're going for a job, you want to know what you're going to get paid. It's why it's money is emotion. Very hard to talk about it. But I think at the end of the day, talking about it up front is going to save a lot of headaches in the long run.
Don Lyme, just during that conversation, I was having a thought about the Murdoch clan. You know, the Murdoch dynasty is extraordinary. It's very involved, multinational corporation now. And there's now three or four generations going through it at once, with the patriarch at the top, and who obviously has a view on most things. It's those sort of organisations, it's kind of difficult to deal.
It's extremely difficult, and they've had a tough time because the business hasn't been running so smoothly lately as well. So it is very hard, and we saw a lot of jockeying for position amongst the siblings. I don't know how they get on, but I would imagine that they may feel that they've been played off each other. But just to reinforce what Bernie said, I mean, I agree with her, and I think it's really important to have no surprises. People do not like surprises in this area. If they've got time to digest something that's a little bit unpalatable, they can work it through. And as Bernie said, it might be the plan is really just managing their expectations and just trying to find out what will make them happy. In our work with rural businesses, it is tricky because farms may need to be kept together, may need to be integrated for roads, access and so on. And then you have the ability of, there's probably one farmhouse and you know, people, adult children are not likely to want to stay in that. So, you know, the biggest case in this area, in the whole area of estate litigation, is arguably a case called Vigolo v. Boston, where the man who felt who was cut out of his father's will worked on the farm from age 16 until he fell out with his father when he was around about 40. He got nothing. So you really need to talk to somebody who knows these cases, because on a straw poll or talking to your mates around the pub, you know, what seems fair may not be what the courts reflected in court decisions. And in fact, the word fair or equal is not in the legislation anywhere.
Let's go back to the WA Country Hour again. This is the Harrington family from Darkin in Western Australia's Great Southern. They got the ball rolling with their current succession plan about 15 years ago. Tim Harrington has some advice for anyone thinking about it.
Get it done early. I think if none of these decisions were made like on just one day, we're going to go in and do a will or anything like that. These were 5, 6, 7 years of thrashing it out. Negotiating, I'd probably say, you know, you negotiated all the points, but you knew once the agreements were signed and that this was the outcome that was achieved, and it was, in the end, you don't win them all, but like, it's the security. Sometimes you've got to take a few steps back to go forward.
Yeah, some pretty good advice from someone who's been there, done that, and bought the T-shirt. Communication we've mentioned as critical, and it should start obviously early.
And that's exactly what he was saying. People think, you know, people put off doing what they perceive as hard things. But unfortunately, you're far better off addressing it up front. Even when say, family members are teenagers. I mean, a lot of times, families are working on farms in particular at a young age. You know, and it'll become quite obvious early on who is going to be good at it, who's going to be better at it, who's going to be terrible at it. And how do you deal with three boys or three girls or a mixture of who all want to stay on the farm? And there's no easy answer. That's the whole thing. There actually is no easy answer, but you're far better off dealing with it early. As I said before, then they can all make an informed decision as, is this going to work for me? give them time. It's so unfair. I mean, and that's where the resentment comes in. So unfair at 40 years of age to find out you have nothing. You know, if you had known that at 20, then you have a decision to make. Will I stay on the farm or will I go elsewhere? There are other, I mean, one of the really good things about living in this era, there are many ways of making a living, you know, not necessarily on the family farm. But it's, I was at a conference and I was sitting around a table and some very wealthy people, you know, obviously successful in business, family business. But out of the eight men sitting around the table, four of them weren't speaking to their siblings. And to me, I think, I don't care how successful, I don't care how much money you've made. To me, success would not be if my children ended up not speaking to each other. Because what is it all about? What are the values? And you know, that's it makes me cry to think that that is what we become focused on without actually understanding end game. What
are we trying to achieve? It's also very important to involve all of the stakeholders. So everybody knows exactly where they sit. And the game plan rolls out.
That's right. And it's important to involve the advisors as well. And, you know, one of the reasons people drag the chain on this is because they think it's going to cost a lot of money. And my advice to your listeners is don't run off to the post office and get change out of $30 buying a post office will. That's a real trap. People don't realise that most of the cases disputing wills are in estates that are a total value of less than $500,000, which when you take into account the value of property, you know,
to be honest, also if it ends up in the courts, it normally drains a lot of the money out of the estate as well.
That's right. Lawyers are going to get paid anyway, and some of them will take on cases on the basis that they get paid at the end. And, you know, invariably the money runs out and then people have to make a very pragmatic decision.
Mm. Silence is not part of the equation. You know, you have to talk about this sort of stuff.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Yeah. Documenting the values, the wishes and the goals. Very important.
Well, that's it. Even if we're talking about family businesses, we're talking about personal strategy planning. There is no point in just thinking about the money. There's no point in just looking at the asset. I mean, I can just see it happening. Owner walks into an office and suddenly saying, oh my God, the value of this is X amount of dollars, and everyone's eyes light up. To me, that's not doing the right by your client. In order to make a plan, whether it's just a financial plan or a succession plan, you have to understand what it is that is driving the goal, the end game. And the way to do that is start off with values. What do you value? What do you want to retain in your life? Then you align that to the goals. Okay, now what are you trying to achieve? And after you know that, and it's not just about the actual owner, the patriarch, the matriarch, it's about everyone else's as well, because there's no point in putting a square peg into a round hole. Mm. So that's why you start with values, you start with goals, you start which is of everyone, and then bring them together as a family. And only after that does the actual legal structure and the financial structure fall out.
Bernie, as the head of the household, I mean, should you say, okay, I'm going to bow out at 75 or 80 or whatever, or still keep it flexible just with an overarching plan?
Yeah, I think that is key. People think that, oh my God, I do a plan, I'm out, I'm on the heap. And it's very, very hard. As I said before, a lot of identity and emotion is wrapped up in a business that's been built up.
Particularly something like a restaurant where, you know, you've been, you know,
the goodwill is nearly about you.
Yeah,
So I think the way to do it is it shouldn't stop you from actually instigating a plan, for drawing it up. But a plan doesn't mean it's all or nothing. It can be over time, with milestones, with time frame. And what that does is it allows people to prepare for change, both the owner and the successor. So the successor comes in and he's given a little bit of authority or power, and he is allowed to make his own mistakes. You know, so it's not someone micromanaging him, but making enough mistakes so that he learns, but also with the safety net that someone with experience mentoring him. It also lets the owner kind of dip his toe elsewhere. He's not kind of out there, because it's very hard if you have had a passion around building a business and that's consumed your life. And when you own your own business, that's what happens. It literally is. It's a 24/7 job. You can't then just cut it off and say, no, we're out. So it's a gradual process. So you can try other things. You can see whether you like it. You might actually say, oh my God, I never realized there was a life outside, and find that you love belly dancing or something that you want to spend the rest of your life doing. There are different ways of doing it and joys to be had. So I think it benefits both people, both ends of it, to take a chip out. And then the owner might say, okay, there are other ways I can leave a legacy in the world. And what is a legacy? Just give them time to reflect.
Yeah. Donald, it's not so that it's set in stone. You know, just because you say 10 years ago, oh, I'm going to retire, doesn't mean it has to happen that way. It's a plan.
That's right. Just like when you're running a business, you look at the cash flow and what your customers and what's happening with your competitors on a year-to-year basis, and then you recalibrate. I think it's very important, as Bernie said, to have some sense of family agreement, if possible. And it may not be a legally binding document, but it is very, very helpful in disputes we see with families. It's often not a brilliant legal point that's made or a clause that's written beautifully. It's the fact that the siblings say, remember, we had that strange conversation, and one of the tenets of our in the creed of our family is no fighting. We agree to share equally, whatever it is. Mm. We keep family business within the family. All of those things are extremely powerful and vague and open to interpretation, but often they will stop people engaging lawyers and ripping a family apart. Yeah. So if you haven't had the conversation, you've missed out on that opportunity.
What happens if you've got some very strong personalities and there's very diverging views and, you know, you're really struggling to get a consensus?
Very hard. But, you know, it's a process. You wear people down. You get a third party who is specialised at that, a facilitator. You get somebody who's emotionally intelligent, and maybe they break off into groups and they work slowly development on one or more sides and try and bring the parties together. But if you're too close, it is very hard, because the person who's close brings a lot of baggage because they've been involved in other rows, or they've been passive when a patriarch has allowed a particular thing to happen. So I really recommend in that situation a third party facilitator.
Tim has SMS'd. He says, I'm an accountant who deals a lot with succession on farms. I start every family discussion by saying my aim is to ensure that all the family will be sitting around at Christmas dinner next year. Every decision should keep this in the back of the mind. You know, a head of family agreement, he says, is very helpful.
And that's it. When I actually do facilitation, one of the things I do on a whiteboard, I put up all decisions be made in the best interests of the family. It's not in the best interest of the lawyer or the bank account or anything. It's actually all decisions be made in the best interest of the family. And then one of the things you do to get them into that emotional space, talk about what family means to them. Before you actually go into the business, what does family mean? What does success look like with regards to the family? And you keep on bringing them back to that when there are like sticking points. Bring them back to, well, you actually said you wanted to keep the family together. You said that this is what you meant. So how does this point of view honour that? So it's a kind of, there are little in the room, and this is what happens. Unfortunately, it's a skill. It's a learned skill, and not everyone can do it. And bringing someone in opens people's minds. You know, if you bring the emotion into it, but the gentle emotion, the empathy. I mean, I've talked before about empathy, understanding that the daughter-in-law isn't just a money-grabbing woman. She's actually really afraid. She's afraid for her kids. She's no idea how they're going to survive past 40. And that's a real concern. That's not someone who's money-grabbing. That's someone who just has a real fear for her children.
A couple of experts who deal with it on a day-to-day basis with us tonight. Bernie Bolger, who's a counsellor, mediator and life coach, and Donald Griffin, who's an estate planning lawyer. And we're talking tonight about succession. And perhaps there's some stories out there that you'd like to share. Maybe of things that have gone terribly, terribly right, or maybe terribly, terribly wrong with your situation. It's one of those things, as we've seen with a couple of the big families that have dominated media in this country. It's not always super smooth. You get very strong personalities. The Packer clan, I don't think we're always seeing eye to eye. I know Kerry Packer and his father had a lot of disputes through the years, and likewise, I'm sure his son and Kerry Packer weren't always as one with a plan. And likewise in the Murdoch clan, and of course the Reinhardt clan are an interesting mix as well. Obviously, most of us have, you know, certainly not multiple billions to deal with, but often it's of business that's been part of the family. It's part of the structure and the DNA, and how we change ownership and change directions is sometimes hard. Chris, you've got a classic family success story. You know, the Cooper's Brewing family.
Exactly, and they do presentations around on how they have survived. Basically, the theory is that nobody owns the company, but they do become custodians, and I think that's a very good philosophy to adopt at the start, that nobody's going to own this because it's here for the future generations. The other thing they have is that any person in the family that wants to join the company must also work 10 years for somebody independent. In fact, their current managing director is actually a surgeon. He went and did medicine, Tim Cooper. But I think those sort of theories, and they've also, by keeping a family, it's obviously all set up in a company trust, but some years ago they were a subject to a major takeover by one of the major breweries. And their shares at the time, I think, were valued around 60, and they were offered 200. But they withstood that, and they got the required number of shares to withstand that takeover, which was quite well publicised at the time. But I know those shares now have always, they've just about tripled or doubled what the original takeover was by keeping it in the family, but remaining true to those philosophies. And I think it's a, it even goes back to, who owns Australia? Who are the regional custodians? And I think we can bring that theory forward into the corporate world, all the succession plans.
Yeah, Donald, that's an important part of the equation, isn't it? Making sure that the business doesn't get killed by the infighting.
That's right, and that Cooper story is a great one, and I see it in my practice with much smaller businesses where they might call it a family creed, a family constitution, a family agreement. It's a really good idea. One sure way to disappoint loyal staff is for a blood relative of the founder of the business to rock up in a big car and a sense of entitlement. And even if they don't say the wrong thing, people can be put right off because there's a sense that this person's just going to roll in. So to see them reporting to a non-family member, to see them having their salary and bonus reviewed by a committee, to see them having got experience with a competitor elsewhere, and to have this all very clearly written down is very important. And you know, the thing with those family businesses, transaction costs are killers. So when they get, the lawyers, the loss in value of change of control is very large. Yeah. So,
Chris, I like that idea too of not being a one trick pony and having worked in another business before you actually worked in the family establishment. Chris?
Yes. One of the things that I've had some experience in accounting as well, and I had some farming clients, and when they adopted this theory, because you often have that thing, we've talked about it a little bit earlier, where one of the sons stays on the land and works the property, and the other one goes off onto